Greetings, listeners and viewers. This is Ron Stefanski with yet another interesting episode of Disrupt Ed, where we talk to the do-gooders and determined, the passionate and purpose-driven, the ordinary people out there who are actually making an extraordinary difference in this disrupted world of learning and work. Look around you and consider the obvious. We've just endured a global pandemic. Industry 4.0 is changing the landscape of business as we know it. GPT chatbot unleashed a ton of interest and expectations around how artificial intelligence is going to further disrupt the world of work and learning. And so here today, we've got a special guest that's going to help us understand better how education is being disrupted by the technology and how we continue to make a difference with people who are learning. I'm joined today by Dipesh, who is the Vice President of Magic Ed Tech from New York City. Welcome, Dipesh.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast. Thank you for inviting me.
So we have been off the episode. We've been getting acquainted. We first met following each other through mutual friends. And I find your story about how you have entered into this disrupted world a fascinating one. So I want to hear about your origin story. How did you get to the United States? Because it hasn't been that long since you've been here. And you've had a fairly meteoric rise in the world of business once you've arrived here. So I want to unpack that a little bit with you. How did you decide you were going to come to the U.S.?
Yes, thanks, Ron. And I don't know if I'd call it meteoric, but yes, it's been a journey. And coming to the U.S. was, you know, it's not that it was on my planned list of agenda, you know, my bucket list or something like that, but life so happens. So I was born and brought up in India. I got my formal education over there. I graduated in physical therapy and then decided to shift careers. I did my MBA in sales and marketing. And at that time, my girlfriend, now my wife, she moved to the U.S. 4 years before I did. She did a master's here. We continued seeing each other and we decided to get married. And we had to make a decision. Either she moves back to India or I move to the US. Yeah, I mean, I think I took a decision to move here. So it was an accidental thing, but I'm very happy. It's been 7 years now that I'm here and, you know, love the country, love the city that I'm in. So,
well, I'm so glad to hear that. We recently had a guest, Alam Al-Khudaf Kamri, who came here. Not having stepped in the United States until she did for the first time, having been married in Jordan and to an American. And she talked about her origin story and also had a fairly interesting journey in the world of work. And so I want to unpack that a little bit. So you were telling me off episode that you came from parents, loving parents who didn't have a formal education, but nonetheless somehow instilled in you the drive to get an education. And you were describing that as a real differentiator, a real difference maker for you. So tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So I belong to a lower middle class family in India. A lot of my relatives and folks were into business. A lot of them were doing very well. My father had a small shop and the business wasn't going anywhere. But because he had a shop, he couldn't pursue his education. He studied till ninth grade. My mom studied till ninth grade as well. My father's business didn't go anywhere. So he had no other option, you know, because he hadn't completed his education. He had no other option to go somewhere else. So he knew that, my parents knew that the limitations that they faced, they wanted to make sure that me and my sister never have to face something like that. So while they couldn't complete their degrees or even their high school, they made sure that both their kids did. They supported in whatever way they could. And you know, we are one of the few in our community, in our society. We are very fairly orthodox, you know, conservative society back in India. Now things are changing, but we were few of them who studied. I did my postgrad, my sister did as well. So very fortunate that our parents did that for us. You know, they made sure that they compromised on whatever they could to save money for our education, and we are where we are. So that's it's been. I think I mentioned this to you. Education is the single biggest thing for social mobility.
that's why we have these episodes, and that's why we talk to folks like you, is that in a world in which 700 people have as much wealth as the rest of all of us, billions, we have a level of income disparity that needs to be addressed. And one of the ways for people to jump on the rung to a better life that still remains, no matter where you are in the world, is an education. And so I appreciate the effects it's had on you. And at the same time, I think there's also an adventuresome spirit that you have and a little bit of self-awareness. You were mentioning to me before the episode that your difficulty in coming to the United States was not that you didn't know English, because you obviously are fluent in the language, but that learning the American accent was a completely different adventure. And you ventured out there and you did something really interesting to flip the script. So I think our viewers would find this a fascinating part of your story of getting a grasp in and starting to socialize within companies and within the professional community of work. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. You know, when I reflect back on those days, this was 7-8 years back when I just moved. Of course, I was looking for a job. And I'm not a technical person. I've done sales and marketing. And I was looking for a job in sales in a new country. And, you know, I was getting on interview calls. And this was the time before Zoom meetings. We had phone screens and, you know, I couldn't understand what the other person said. And I think that they didn't understand what I said because of the heavy accent, right? I mean, I couldn't understand their accent. They couldn't understand my accent. It was a difficult time. I kept thinking to myself that if I'm not able to understand the accent of somebody who's giving the interview, how am I going to be able to sell anything to anyone over here? So I think that was a big challenge. But the way I tried to overcome, you know, first of all, I'm very happy that Magic, you know, the company that I'm giving me a chance. It's not very easy. Somebody who's come new to the country, you know, you give them a chance. I'm very happy, very lucky to be here. I think what I did was once I started in my role, I realized my strength was not my verbal communication, but written communication and my ability to personalize my messages. So to your point of flip the script, you know, I was reaching out to different people. I'm in sales, of course, I was trying to sell things. I was trying to reach out. I didn't get any response. So I just reached out to people, very senior executives in companies, and said, you know, I need help. I'm new to the country. I'm supposed to be doing this. I'm expected to get meetings with people. But it looks like, you know, I'm not able to connect with the right people. And I need help. This is what we do. Can you help me? And trust me, that is when I actually saw that people wanted to help. And, you know, I got one breakthrough that led to multiple other breakthroughs. So yeah, I think I just focused on my strength and stayed persistent. It eventually, now I can understand everyone.
Right. No, and that's such a heartening story, because all of us are descended from immigrants. And for new Americans, it's sometimes concerning how they assimilate into American society. And what you've really demonstrated is something simple, but critically important. And that is, as a newcomer, opening yourself up and asking for help taps into something uniquely human as well as spectacularly American. And that is a real desire to help each other. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. You know, we hear so much about how polarizing society is and how polarizing the politics of our day is. But in truth, I think you tapped into a large, large insight. And that is that many people, many, many, many more people than are polarized are actually out there living common everyday lives and anxious and excited when they have opportunities to help each other. And so you've really manifest that in your selling approach. And obviously that served you well. Over the past 7 years, Dipesh, you've moved from an inside salesperson to now vice president within the organization. And now you're talking to C-level executives. And I find that fascinating what Magic Tech is doing. You're really helping people to understand the technology and how to manifest it in the learning. And I think that's where we're going to see tremendous strides as we've never seen before.
Absolutely. And you're right. I think we humans, and this was a lesson taught by one of my mentors, we humans innately want to help others. It's just how I help you help me. That's the most important thing. And so yeah, I mean that's how it goes. And if we are able to tap into right, I call it help gene of ours, I think everybody's willing to help you.
Right. So now we're in the pandemic, and the script is flipped for many who are helping teachers teach and learners to learn. And we require our teachers to pivot 180 degrees, sometimes in 72 hours, shut down their face-to-face classroom, and suddenly use technology they've never used before to come in and recreate a classroom experience. Obviously, that created challenges for teachers and learners. Talk to me about the technology and how it's actually helping some now as we've come out of the pandemic to better utilize technology in ways that actually assist learning and assist development for students in the classroom.
Yeah, I think it's a very fascinating, you know, just to give you some context and just to give audience some context, the company that I work with, Magic EdTech, what we do is we help other EdTech companies and publishers develop their learning products and platforms. So we've been doing technology and product development for EdTech companies and publishers for now 30 years and more. And what we've seen is that before pandemic, you know, technology and tools were there in the classroom, but they were nobody really, you know, touch them as much as they would wanted to. And it was there as an optional element, like digital books were optional. All of these things were optional. I think pandemic made it mandatory for people to learn to get on the digital tools. And with that, what we saw was proliferation of the number of tools there are. I think I read somewhere that to solve one problem, there are hundreds of tools. So, you know, that, you know, teachers obviously adopted, some of them were forced to adopt technology, but teachers adopted technology. But then you saw a point where they started becoming overwhelmed with technology. There's just a lot of tools. And while some tools are great, not a lot of them are designed in a way that makes teachers' life easy. So I think the conversation now that we are having is, how do we make sure that the tools that are designed to help teachers really do help them? Tools that are designed to help students help them. And tools that are designed to help parents help them make sure that they are able to deliver learning effectively and ensure that students are learning every day. And I think with the rise of things like ChatGPT, I feel that it's just going to take a different proportion altogether. So that's my take. I think the key is, how do you make technology as simple as you can for teachers to adopt in an already crowded day that they have?
Right. I think that's an extremely important point you're making. It's always seemed to me that there are three things that allow technology to take root in a classroom when you're working with a teacher. And that's when a teacher can see that the product or tool can take time off task. So things that used to take them a long time can now be handled administratively and takes time off of those tasks so they can spend more time on their lesson plans or getting ready to work with their students. So that's one place. The other is where it increases their productivity, where they may have to make an initial investment, but now they can reach many or do many, many more things. And the third is where the technology can actually be used in particular circumstances. I think in terms of math and science a great deal, where the visuals or the ability to do animations actually helps teachers to create more learning experiences. Because in science, for example, it's often expensive for schools to have all the chemicals to do chemical reactions and demonstrate learning points. And now you have very sophisticated animations that can show students how that happens and create and basically recreate that effect. And I think that's really important in the technology. But I think you're absolutely right. Is it just the user experience that you think is important in simplifying it for teachers? Or are there other things that are helping to simplify it?
Yeah, I think user experience is big. You know, you spoke about simulation. And, you know, we've been doing simulations for a lot of companies for a really long time. And I think what a simulation does is actually reduces the time a teacher needs to teach a concept to a student. So, for example, if you have to teach photosynthesis, one way is to do is read the text to them. The other way is to show a video. The third way is actually for them to simulate things on their system so that they can learn it themselves. So I think how one is user experience has to be right up there. Second, and when I talk about user experience, the other important thing is accessibility. can every students use it? Can students with visual impairments, auditory impairments, neurodiverse students, can they use it? And the other thing is how close it is to engaging the student. So I think the user experience, the student engagement are going to be extremely critical. And user experience itself has many components like accessibility, universal design language, things like those.
Well, I think the user accessibility is really important, but I think you hit on something else. And this is really what became helped by technology, but also hurt by the technology, and that's the student engagement. So during the pandemic, we saw that a lot of teachers resorted to using a classroom tool like Google Meet or Zoom to simply put their kids in front of them in a you know, recreated classroom setting. And that's not really online learning, if you think about it. That's really simply a change in the medium for delivering pretty standard education. What you're talking about is far different. It's about engaging the students. And I think many people said, oh, online learning doesn't work for younger students. Well, you know, a Zoom call with a 5 or 6 year old with a limited attention span isn't really online learning as much as it is, you know, a fast track effort to bring students through the educational process during the epidemic. What have teachers learned about technology now? Do you think it's as optional as it once was, or do you think more teachers have embraced technology, and do you see a much more major use of it in the classroom and how they're approaching the use of it?
I think a lot of teachers have embraced technology. I go to a lot of conferences, and of late, the conferences that I'm going to, teachers are talking about how can they use tools like Canva to create their own content. So I see that shift happen real time. So yes, teachers have embraced technology. But I think what is happening is as they encounter more technology, they are starting to question, is this tool going to help me, as to your point, Ron, help me save my time? Or do I have to learn this to be able to use this? And then it has issues, right? So they started questioning tools and technologies. One thing that I think is going to see an uprise is, can I use my text like I would converse normally to a software and get it done, get it do things? So for example, I want to set up a virtual classroom. Why do I have to click 5 buttons and go somewhere? Why can't I just type that, you know, set up this classroom with 5 students, include Ron, include Dipesh, and software should do it on its own. With tools like ChatGPT, that's possible. Tools like AI tools, that's completely possible. So I see that there's going to be a lot of uptick in this kind of UI where teachers don't have to do clicks and buttons, but just give inputs in the form of text.
What's interesting, what you're saying about ChatGPT is something that I think a lot of teachers are contemplating. And in fact, they're contemplating it with a relatively high level of anxiety. I think when new technology comes on the scene, there's always a fear. There's always a fear that technology is going to replace teachers. And I found that to be true during recent visit to Capitol Hill, where I spoke to legislators about online learning. And you could tell that for a lot of legislators that are very pro-union, they're very concerned that technology is going to usurp the teacher. How do we do a better job of helping people understand that technology has never replaced a teacher? I don't see any circumstances over the last 3 decades where an influx of technology has suddenly jettisoned the need for teachers. In point of fact, we now have a teacher shortage that it will take several years for us to recreate or to solve for.
I think technology can be a force to improve the effectiveness of a teacher. And, you know, the fears of technology replacing teachers or any other professionals. I mean, there are fears. There's some element to that. But I think by and large, as we evolve to this kind of new reality, I think teachers will learn to adopt technology to make themselves better. And it actually, you mentioned a very good point about teacher shortage. Can we do things that, you know, are not teachers' core activity? Can tools do that? And can we free teachers' time to do what they are really good at, which is teaching, which is pedagogy, explain, rather than having teachers do things that is not a best use of their time? So I think that's where technology comes in. Okay, you do what you're really, really good at, thinking, understanding student, connecting with student in real life, and give the rest of the things which are not really something that you know, you should be spending time on to me, and I'll take care of that. I think that's the best way that teachers and technology can coexist and live very well.
That makes a lot of sense, Dipesh. Now I want to put a huge caveat on my next question, and that is, you know, we said before the episode, and as we were talking about what we were going to talk about, you know, we don't turn these episodes into advertorials for the companies that we represent. But at the same time, I'm really intrigued by ed tech companies that have taken seriously the student experience or the teacher experience, and they bring a lot of passion to that. And one of the things that I noticed as we were getting acquainted over the past couple months is that you're really passionate about working with people to differentiate the student experience. And it seems to me that there's a direct correlation with that and the success that Magic EdTech has enjoyed. So can you talk a little bit about what, as a company, you've most learned that has allowed the company to have an absolutely explosive growth over the last 30 years?
Yeah, I think good question. And one of the things I love working about this company is it helps me stay in education and ed tech. And I told you the impact education has had on my life, right? And, you know, I feel that in a way that I help others, a lot of other students like me get a life-changing effect through my work in the company. So I think Magic EdTech, since the last 30 years, we've always been digital. 30 years back, digital meant floppy drives, digital meant video cassettes and things like that.
Right.
So, and we've seen how technology has evolved over the last 30 years. I think because we've been in education and digital education, we really understand how a student interacts with a digital learning product, how a teacher interacts with a digital learning product. So if tomorrow you come to me and say, you know, I need to build these new games or, you know, new tools for teacher students, I'm not just somebody who gets on engineers, but I get somebody who understands the pedagogy, understands the student behavior. And when we work on that project, we'll make sure that we question you. Why are you doing what you're doing? You know, why do we need to have this kind of screen size? Why not smaller screen size? So I think, to your question, over the last 30 years, we've really understood the student and teacher and parent. Parents are a big part in education ecosystem. Students, teachers, parents, administrators, ecosystem, we understand their role really, really well. And that just helps us develop products that are adopted by them. Because at the end of the day, you want products to be adopted by your users. That's what we focus on. And the other big thing is we are very focused on digital learning for everyone. I spoke about accessibility. It's huge for us that, you know, it's a part of our, you know, a part of our statement that digital learning for everyone. Everyone should get digital learning. You know, it irrespective of where you're born, what's your zip code, everybody should get digital learning. And we need to develop products that reach everyone.
I think that's so important. In my own life, as in yours, education was a big differentiator. I'm super passionate about making sure that we have accessible educational experiences for everyone, irrespective of their zip code or where they live on the planet. And so I think what you're talking about is very, very important. I think I'm going to go back to something you shared as we were getting acquainted in an early conversation. I wrote it down, and I'm going to reflect it back to you to let you just share more about this personal philosophy you have. So you were talking about your idea about being anyone, anytime, doing anything, anywhere. And I thought that was such a simple way of saying you have a big aperture for looking at the world through the educational lens. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so I have two kids, Ron, one 4.5 and one 2 weeks now. So my 4-year, his favorite movie is Zootopia. And in that, there is one dialogue where they say, you know, in Zootopia, anyone can be anything. And that dialogue really, really stuck with me because I think that's very true of us human. I mean, if I think about my own life, I was studying physical therapy in Mumbai, talking to you and CXOs here in New York, sitting here, right?
Right.
So anyone can be anything, anywhere. Education makes that possible. Today, you are not limited. If tomorrow you want to change your career, overnight, you think that, you know, today night, you think, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing. I want to be something else. You can be. there are tons of resources available. I mean, I've heard of stories of people who, and I've learned myself on YouTube. I've trained myself on things and, you know, learned sales. I moved from physical therapy to sales, right? How did I train myself? Of freely available resources online. So you could do that and you could choose a career of your choice. You could build a product that you want to build. You can learn technology. You could basically do anything if you really want to because of the availability of education that's there with us. So yeah, I very, very strongly believe in that philosophy. You can be anything doing, you could be anyone doing anything at any point in time.
Tepesh, I want to thank you for being on Disrupt Ed. You bring such a warm and earnest personality to your work. And I think that's so vitally important when working with teachers and helping them to teach better and helping students to learn. So I appreciate your earnestness, your intellectual curiosity. Congratulations on your newborn. It also reminds me of a story from one of our previous guests talking about their kids and learning how to make learning fun at an early age. And I think that's one of the side benefits of being in this ed tech world of ours is that we see things coming, we see things in development, we see things that are already out there. And we're given this wonderful opportunity as we begin to parent to say, wow, these are things that would make this fun, or this would make things interesting. And I think that's the accessibility challenge that we have to surmount anymore is how do we give kids as much exposure to as many things? And how do we do that across the globe? It's really important. And it's been really important part of my life work in the education space to ensure that everyone across the globe has better access to these educational tools. So I appreciate what you're doing, what Magic Ed Tech is doing, Tepesh. Any last thoughts before we leave our audience here?
Yeah, I would just leave everyone with one thought. There's a concept that I learned 2 days back. It's called mental liquidity. And I'll give you the exact definition of what mental liquidity means. But basically, it is a concept that I read in the book, read a blog by Morgan Housel. It says ability to quickly abandon previous beliefs when the world changes or when you come across new environment. I think that today's, if you want to develop one skill, that is this mental liquidity. World is changing so rapidly. What you had or your firm beliefs 2 years back would change completely. So I think your ability to mold your mind to the new information that's around is going to be very, very, very critical for you to adapt to the new reality. So that's the last thought. Thank you so much, Ron. And it was a pleasure talking to you.
I love that. So, Tepesh, thank you so much. For our listeners and viewers, you've been enjoying this episode with Tepesh Jain, the Vice President at Magic Ed Tech. And if you've heard anything worth remembering, it's being anyone, anytime, doing anything, anywhere, being a lifelong learner, and recognizing that education is a legacy that we need to ensure is extended to everyone across the planet. And thanks to people like Tepesh, that's happening on a global scale. Thank you, Tepesh, for joining us. For those of you out there, thanks for listening. Join us on subsequent episodes. Look for us. Join our community. Subscribe to our newsletters. Subscribe to our podcasts. And comment and feedback on this episode and what you want to hear from these do-gooders out there, these determined, passionate, purpose-driven people like Tepesh. Ordinary lives, extraordinary impact. Thank you again, Tepesh. And we will see everyone soon in a future episode. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.